From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
This is The Media Project, an opportunity for us to have a half hour of commentary and analysis, and as we like to say, perhaps even some insight into news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, your host with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. There he is.
I'm your faithful servant, Rex.
My faithful servant. What a guy. And Kaylin Brown, professor at the College of St. Rose, longtime journalist before that. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
You're well. You're well. I'm good.
I'm no one's servant, though.
No.
That's right.
You know, it's impossible to talk about the media this week without talking about the dominant issue of these last couple of weeks, not the Olympics, no, but rather the shooting in Parkland, Florida at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, and the remarkable coverage that we have seen of those astonishingly articulate young people who have been speaking up with aplomb, with a grace that is astonishing to see, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. I mean, the articulateness of some of these kids is incredible. Number one, but I was thinking about, since this is The Media Project, I was thinking about the media's role in all of this. You know, if a tree falls in the woods and all of that and nobody hears it, it doesn't happen. So says, you know, wisdom. But in the case of this, the press has really given voice to these kids. And they are so articulate, and the cable and the news programs and the newspapers have all contributed to it, so that they really have become heroic. And I think the press plays a large role in that.
I think the press plays a large role in that as well. And I think the students from Parkland recognize that, and they have actually even articulated that. That we recognize that the media coverage is helping us, and please avoid paying attention to those that are detractors, because they are experiencing some of the negativity that comes with getting media coverage. And there are some trolls out there and some manufacturers of fake information who are sharing fallacies about what these students are talking about, that they are actors, for instance, which is not the case. They are students who experience this tragedy, and they are trying to move adults in a direction that would enhance our efforts at gun control. But evidently, the detractors on some websites are making up stories. How you could make up a story about a tragedy like this, I don't know, but it's happening. You
consider, Kaylin, the case of David Hogg. He's this really good-looking 17-year-old who's called the news director, student news director at the school. And he is a wonderful spokesman for the student group. He was someone who has been attacked because his presentation is so polished. And it turns out there have been, as you say, a lot of accounts saying that he's an actor, that he's been paid by George Soros. Somehow Soros becomes the liberal boogeyman, you know. There is a YouTube clip that was posted by a 51-year-old guy from Idaho who had very little following until this week. It became the number one trending video on YouTube. This obscure thing from some dude in Idaho, 200,000 views before it was taken down, a lie that he was a crisis actor. And this is one of the grave issues, I think, that we have to confront as a society, is looking at the power of these social media platforms and the power to spread absolute lies.
Well, trollism is, of course, something that we all have to live with. I do here. I get them after these programs, for example. People will say, you're a hypocrite because you did this or did that. You know, and I used to answer every one of them. I don't anymore. I have a folder, And the folder, which
it's a folder round.
And I, no, it's not round because you know you want to see whether they repeat themselves and all the rest. So I put them into the folder, which is entitled PIA. Go figure it out for yourself. Yeah, it could be P-I-T-A.
Oh, indeed. Took me a minute on the uptake
pita.
There.
I call it pita, yes, like the bread. Mm-hmm.
But you are preserving for your listeners the integrity of your broadcasts when you don't subject them to all that trollism. You're acting as a gatekeeper and a journalist when you make the decision not to share that. Some would argue perhaps you're doing something other and might be threatening the First Amendment, but I don't think that trolls are entitled to the same platforms.
Well, it depends. I answer every letter or every person who calls if I find that there is any merit in what they are raising with me. In other words, if it's meritorious, and even if they're wrong, but when they are just plain mean and out for blood, I don't answer. And I find it to be the most effective way of dealing with them, which is not to answer them.
What do you do when you have mainstream media, though, picking up on some of this stuff? I mean, I would say that the radio stations that carry Rush Limbaugh, the most widely syndicated radio program in the country, would be identified as mainstream media. And Rush Limbaugh has picked up on this stuff about these teenagers. He's saying, everything they're doing is right out of the Democrat Party's various playbooks. It has the same enemies, the NRA and guns. You've got Bill O'Reilly saying...
O'Reilly's still around.
He's got a blog, of course. Now everybody has a blog. But
well,
he's
didn't he get hired for bad sexual stuff?
Fired. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it was bad.
That's a question. Did he get hired for that reason? That misspeak is real. He was hired by Roger Ailes. I wonder. Maybe it was a team effort.
Maybe it was.
But then he got canned, right?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Thanks to Emily Steele and the other people that worked with her in reporting what the deal was with O'Reilly, and she tracked down an excellent source to go on the record with her name saying what O'Reilly had done, but I don't want us to give short shrift to these students here who are making good use of the media down in Florida.
Well, and then there's another aspect to all of this that keeps floating through my mind, and that is the Russians. Now, we know the Russians are out to make as much turmoil in this country as possible. Oh, what am I guessing at this? I'm a Democrat and therefore I'm saying it. No, it is the top Trump appointees to the top security jobs who are saying this. So I'm assuming every time I read some, well, if it's an appropriate word, crap like the kind that you guys are talking about now, hey, this may be coming from Svetlana.
Well, there have been some reports that indeed Russian trolls have been attacking what happened in Florida, and they are trying to reap discord among the electorate here in the United States. Stories have been reported that, in fact, that is a possibility, that the bots have taken over and started to create trouble over gun control issues. Other individuals are also using this tragedy where 17 lives were lost in a horrible, horrible massacre. We had a Florida State Representative's aide who attacked the kids, and I think it was, again, over the actor allegation that mm-hmm. they are operatives of the Democratic Party and that they were speaking on behalf of some political agenda rather than the tragedy they just experienced. Fortunately, that aide was fired. And then he tweeted that he should not have been held accountable for the comments he made criticizing these teenagers. So that was the most interesting thing.
I tried to inform a reporter of information relating to his story, is what he says. Yeah, inform a reporter by passing along a bogus claim that these teenagers were actors hired to pretend to be students, which
okay,
is
okay. So
just
here's what's so interesting
awful.
About this, Rex and Caitlin. We see how terrible this kind of thing can be, and how much money is being funneled into all of this by the National Rifle Association. I love the fact that I keep seeing the newspapers now listing the amount of money that each politician has taken from the NRA. People should know that.
I think we can't tell at this point which way this is going to go. That is, it could be that NRA will become toxic, but I think it's less likely. I think that there still is a huge residue of support, especially in mid-America, in the Red Belt, let's say, for a staunch Second Amendment stance, which the NRA capitalizes upon. And I don't know that this, even this tragic moment, I mean, who could have thought that Sandy Hook wouldn't yield some response, but it didn't.
Well,
nothing
it did
happened
in,
after
it
Sandy
did in
Hook.
New York State, where you had a governor who thought he'd
yeah,
he did the right
in
thing.
A reliably blue state, but, you know, yeah. across the country, nada.
So you make a very good point. So,
you know,
there's
it,
a million mother march. I was there. Not being a mother, but I was there in support. And I have to say that after they went home, there was no follow-up. These kids are following up, and they're being told by their school administrations, you get out, you don't come to class, you're in trouble. And they say, we don't give a damn.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there are going to be several school walkouts. We are going to see more of this. You know, it does play into kids wanting to get out of class. I'm not saying right now
in the
midst of the tragedy, but in the coming weeks, there will be some of this. But we, as a society, can be led by these young people. They're not going to put up with this stuff. And in the same way that youth culture led America out of the Vietnam War, and I think that's true.
Yes.
I think that youth culture might be something that can make a difference here, finally, that this could be one of those turning points.
You know, Rex, that's a very good point. However, I don't have much doubt that the youth culture, which did lead us out of Vietnam, and I was one of them.
You were young back then.
it was that nobody wanted to go to Vietnam and get their behind shot off. I mean, let's face it, that was part of it.
And no one wants to go to school and be shot. And these students are completely justified in what they're doing. And I, as a teacher, completely support their efforts on this front.
And you should, because someday it's going to start in colleges. Somebody's going to walk in and start to use...
Well, it did. UAlbany, right. Actually, we got an AP award at the Times Union years ago when Ralph Tortorici went into a classroom on one of the platforms.
The classroom, which was right next to my
A history classroom, and shot up a classroom... Yes,
and
that happened.
In the era
Virginia
of
Tech.
Modern school shootings began actually at the University of Texas, Charles Whitman climbing the bell tower and shooting in, I think, 64 or something like that.
You know, you can say that, but I happen to think it was, I don't want to start bragging rights, but I do think it was Simon's Rock around the corner from where I live.
Yes.
And I'll never forget it because Channel 6 called me up and asked me if I would go over there and look into it. They couldn't. They were hearing rumors, but they couldn't do it the next morning. There were 46 trucks with you know, masks on top of them, broadcasting from there. And people say, well, but they weren't kids. Yeah, they were. The Simon's Rock kids, as a very good correspondent pointed out to me by mail, the Simon's Rock kids are high school age.
You know, back to your original point, though, Alan, on the coverage of this being so powerful. You know, you have moments where television coverage, when it is raw, live, it is so powerful. When you look at the conversation in the White House where these people confronted the president, and, you know, let us give credit to Donald Trump for sitting there and taking it, however you may think about his response. When you think about the 7,000 people packed into an auditorium down in Florida that CNN aired live with Marco Rubio really taking it on the chin, from people booing him, cheering loudly for the question of banning assault rifles, holding Rubio to account for his what has been sort of his tendency to sort of be viewed as inauthentic, let's say. That is compelling television. And you have to say that there are some times when different media work better for different kinds of stories. That's really good television. And it is powerful. And it does move people emotionally.
So do you give credit to people who show up for those kinds of meetings? After all, it's nationwide. It's CNN. On the other hand, John Faso, for example, among other Republican candidates for Congress right now, will not meet with their people. John Faso, to his credit, comes on and he answers every question that somebody calls in here on Vox Pop. And then I get calls from, you know, people on the more liberal side of things who scream at me and say, you should never have that guy on. You should not allow him to have a voice. But he does say, I'm not going to go into a room where people are screaming at me.
Yeah. What does Elise Stefanik come on with you?
She keeps getting scheduled to come on with us. She's been on once, or I think maybe twice with us. But then we get a lot of cancellations.
For those out of the region, she's the youngest Republican congresswoman representing the northern part of New York's Capital Region in the Adirondacks. We spoke of her last week because we had a letter from an organizer of some of the rallies outside her district office who complained that there wasn't much media coverage. We have another letter this week supporting that point of view from Lisa of Albany saying, I agree with listener Joe who complained about the shortage of coverage of the many protests taking place against Stefanik. These are routine protests that take place outside her office all the time, sometimes a dozen people, sometimes perhaps more. The photos I've seen of them have been a few people holding signs, and they are, it is not that, my point was simply not that we shouldn't cover it, but that in making every coverage decision, covering every rally is not, it is not feasible for us to do that, frankly. There just aren't enough reporters to cover everything that goes on.
However, Lisa and Joe are doing the right things in writing these letters.
That's correct.
They're trying to get you to do more, which they consider to be essential. I mean, there are those people who go to bed every night and saying, dear God, let the next Congress be Democratic because it's so important. And
are they going to vote? That's what we care about. Who is going to vote, and how are they going to vote?
I'm
going
to guarantee you Lisa and Joe are going to vote.
Absolutely, and I agree with you that it's important that they are reaching out, because citizens should reach out to the media and let the media know what they want covered. Absolutely, and the media will make its decision on what to cover.
So, Professor, are they, in fact, lobbying the press? You know, I mean, this is such an interesting idea. We know you lobby the legislature in order to get legislators to do things. But since the press are so important in terms of letting people know and motivating people, there is a whole idea here about how, and I get letters all the time that say to me, how can I get the press, you included, guys, to do more? And I always give them a certain amount of advice, one of which is, write a lot of letters to the editor of the paper, because people read those letters. They really do.
They do.
And it's extremely important to do it.
It's Lisa, this writer from Albany, says, she's very articulate. She says, the media should be on the side of the public rather than give comfort to the incumbent malefactors by shortchanging their opponents on some issues like global warming. There is no balanced coverage. I certainly agree with that. But these are dangerous times. Why indulge in excess politeness to liars, corporate water carriers, and Medicare destroyers who never return the favor? The media needs to serve the public as watchdogs, not be only fair, which is irrelevant when the entire government is being disassembled.
Well, you know, this concept of fair is so difficult, you know, because, look, there are a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump. And they think that the press is imbalanced and is lefty and is supporting leftist causes and the Democrats. And they believe it to the core of their bones. So this question of what's being fair, you know, the day that this radio station can't put Herb London on, even for the 4 minutes you always kid around about, Rex.
God, it seems like 20.
Yeah, it does. Or put John Faso on because he's willing to come on for an hour and talk to people on the Vox Pop. And people write to me and I said, and say, why aren't you tougher on him? And I keep saying, why aren't you?
Right.
You know, you can call, you can be tough. And it's amazing how the people who call on our Vox Pop call-in show are so nice to him. I don't mean that they agree with him. I just mean they're extremely nice about the way they phrase their questions.
That's good, though. I mean, they're polite, right?
Polite is exactly what I meant, and I stand corrected.
And I think that's all right. I actually think there's a place for that kind of presentation, especially in public radio, where you want to have a presentation that is in part educational. Remember, that was sort of the original notion of public broadcasting, was educational broadcasting.
Yes.
And so you want to provide a platform that offers an opportunity for people to express their point of view. Not that you roll over and play dead, and not that you are giving comfort to the incumbent malefactors, as Lisa eloquently puts it. I love that word, malefactors.
Yeah, but it's important. I don't think that reporters are sitting around saying, I'm going to be polite. I think they're trying to do their jobs. And generally, we get more information as reporters when we are civil and not antagonistic to our sources. So
what was the toughest one as a reporter you ever had? Can you think back into your history and say, there was a day that I was in a press conference or I did this and somebody accused me of being a pawn or something like that.
I have no memory of being accused of being a pawn. That's interesting. I have memories of a CEO at Dean Witter refusing to let me pay for lunch and taking my arm by the hand down at Jack's because he didn't think that I should be paying for his lunch. That was when I was a business news reporter. But so that was a little interesting because
your editor
laid his hand
right.
on
we
me.
Don't allow reporters to accept value, things of value. So you had to pay for his lunch.
Well, that's what I told him. And it was not going in a good direction. And I guess because of my stature, I didn't have as much literal strength at the table. So I went back to my editor after because I did allow him to do it because I was in an untenable position. Mm-hmm. And then I immediately went back to my business editor and said, I need you to know this happened. Obviously, it's not going to influence the coverage, but I had no control
on
that position.
And your editor said?
That's okay. We understand what happened. We'll be aware of it, and we'll pay attention to stories you write about Dean Witter.
It was before my time. It was, but I mean, and now we're a little bit less concerned these days about a small gesture. If somebody who is a politician picks up a reporter's beer or something at an event, I'm less concerned about that than I am about a closeness of social structure. Alan talks about this often in the context of the state capitol, where reporters and politicians socialize, and that is dangerous. You know, there is really. I even saw it in the U.S. Capitol. We had a correspondent for a while for Hearst Newspapers, whose kids were going to school with the kids of U.S. senators, and so she would see these senators in the Capitol and talked about what's going on at school, and she would see them at the school assemblies. And so you almost can't avoid that, and we certainly have that situation here in a small context in Albany. But that is a dangerous situation where you have a social structure that puts reporters and the people that they have to hold to account right together. It's a difficult thing to...
I think it's why journalists always often end up socializing with each other. I mean, there were, in the heyday of journalism in the 90s, I remember we all gravitated together. At the end of our shift, we moved on to another place together.
And sat in the hole.
Holmes and Watson, a block away from the Troy Record, and, you know, it evolved. There were always the biggest dives that you could imagine.
Right. And in Albany, it was the Bleecker, which is just a block up from the Capitol.
The Bleecker,
which whatever it's now called.
Speaking of which,
a guy we haven't heard from, whose name I don't like to mention on the show, has a morning radio program.
On a little AM station across town.
On a tiny little AM station that most people don't listen to. But, yeah, so that he called up Claudia Tenney.
Uh-huh.
And she said...
Congresswoman from Western New York.
Western New York. And she said that, you know, these mass murderers turn out to be Democrats.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that. That is...
Turn out to be Democrats. And she's getting a lot of garbage.
She should. You know, that's irresponsible and
I'm
inflammatory.
Shocked. A member of Congress being irresponsible and inflammatory. Well, here's an opportunity to get things right. We'll close with this great bit of news. There's going to be a gubernatorial debate in Pennsylvania. And the moderator who has been chosen by the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry for their annual dinner is Alex Trebek.
And I have a problem with that because the current governor in Pennsylvania has not confirmed that he's going to participate in that alleged debate.
So they have
a story talking about Trebek, but the real interesting story about Trebek and that this might happen if a debate ensues were the comments from the public who were hysterical when they responded to this post that Trebek was going to be hosting this debate. So you can imagine the Jeopardy questions that resulted from those who commented and along the lines of the national political landscape. And, you know, I definitely suggest that our listeners find that story on Alex Trebek.
Nothing to it. Just be a moderator. Anyway, that's all we have time for today. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week. Come back again for The Media Project.
Interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained Ah, but publishers have worries for
the Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.